From JMI Wealth, Andrew Kelleher, good morning.
Very good morning, Mike.
I tell you what, given what you gave us yesterday about confidence in general, let's end on a positive note. Look to employment, jobs galore, and we're feeling good about it.
Absolutely. We've got to close the week out on a slightly more uplifting data read, given the current uncertainty and reasonably high levels of worry and business stress. So along with crowds at sporting events this weekend, Mike, you can wallow around in the wonderful news that employment confidence is looking good. This is the Westpac McDermott Miller Employment Confidence Survey, and it shows that leaning against some of the headwinds that are being faced in the business and economic environment at the moment is a very healthy labour market. So employment confidence index rose 6.6 points in March to 113.5. So this is further gains on a level that was already above the pre-pandemic levels. And the strongest part of the survey is perceived job opportunities. Look, bottom line here, Mike, is that the households are very positive about the labour market. As I say, it's a welcome foil to the headwinds that are battering us at the moment, and very much in contrast to consumer confidence. But there's one factor we do have to acknowledge. So we've got this strength in the jobs market, lots of jobs, not enough people to fill them, but wages are having to run really fast to keep up with the current rises in the cost of living. So, you know, level of job ads is very strong. And the current level of job opportunities actually might suggest that the employment rate could go even lower than it currently is. But sort of back to this wage growth thing, I tend to agree with the authors that it's unlikely that your local wage growth will completely shield workers from the current stresses in those cost increases. So you will see wage increases. Will they actually match what we're seeing in inflation? Probably unlikely that you'll see it completely cover that. But come on down, Southland. Southland is the regional epicenter of the labour market optimists. Not sure what's going on there. Maybe it's farming. You know, maybe it's the fact that aluminium prices are great, so TY is going to stay open. But yes, Southland, they're the optimists, Mike.
Fantastic. So if you were buying in Rupels this oil, you'd need what? How many truckloads would you need worth of Rupels?
Yeah. Look, there's an interesting aspect to this. This is the news. This is these stories that have been circulating about Putin and how you're going to pay for your gas. But this is more evidence, Mike, of the weaponization of finance that's becoming a sort of key feature of the conflict in Eastern Europe. So you've got your sanctions. They're being used extensively. They're being used against Russia at the country level. We're seeing them against the oligarchs at the individual level. So we're seeing the sort of West is lowering an economic iron curtain down on Russia. And now, not unexpectedly, Vladimir Putin has threatened a response and basically said that if you want Russian natural gas, and he did talk about oil as well, he'd like to see that having to be paid in rubles. So if the West wants a gas, they will have to tacitly assist Russia in supporting the embattled currency. So he said that Russia, should refuse to accept payment for natural gas supplies in currencies from unfriendly countries that have compromised themselves. This, of course, includes euros and US dollars. And we've talked before about the European reliance on Russian natural gas. 40% of Europe's supplies come from Russia. The thing is, how's this actually going to work? And by the way, natural gas prices really spiked in Europe yesterday. But how it's actually going to work? Because Russia actually needs hard foreign currencies at the moment to pay for imports. It's very difficult for them to do that at the moment because of the restrictions on actually doing transactions. They can't pay for anything at the moment with their rubles. But if I look at the ruble, Mike, pre-Ukraine, ruble was trading about 75 rubles to the US dollar. On the back of all of this, what was going on, it went to 144 rubles to the US dollar. But what people might not have noticed is in the last few days, it's actually come back quite a lot, and it was down below 100. This, of course, moved it around a bit. It settled back at around 100 now. So there's no shortage of volatility in the ruble market. Mm. And just a quick note, the Russian share market opened again last night, and it actually ended 4.37% higher, which you would say was somewhat unexpected until you know that there's a whole bunch of restrictions on trading. Only 15% of listed companies are trading. Foreigners aren't allowed to sell their shares, I think, until April, so it's not really a functioning market.
What are the numbers?
It's green. Green numbers this morning, Mike. The Dow Jones is up 222 points, 34,581. That's 0.65%. The S&P 500 is up 0.8%, 4,492. And the NASDAQ is up 1.2%. So currently trading at 14,088. Overnight, the FTSE 100 gained 7 points, 7,467. The Nikkei gained 70 points, 28,110. Shanghai Composite was down 21, 3,250. The ASX 200 gained 9 points, 7,387. We saw further weakness in Fisher & Paykel Healthcare yesterday, down another 4.6% fall. That pushed our index down 43 points, 0.36% to 12,017. On the currencies, one Kiwi dollar get you 0.6942 US, 0.9261 Aussie, 0.6320 Euro, 0.5269 pounds, 84.94 Japanese yen, gold $1,963.80, and Brent crude still sitting around the problematic level of $119.77.
You have the most wonderful weekend. Catch up next week. JMI Wealth and Andrew Kelleher.